League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Green 19 podcast. I'm Dominique Yates. Joining me are my colleagues Ryan Wood and Tom Silverstein. Back from Brazil after the Packers start the season 0-1. But before we dive into all things Packers, because there's a lot of things to talk about. First off, personally, guys, how was the trip to South America for you?
It was something. It was a lot of travel, but we met a lot of really cool people. I would say just from, you know, the atmosphere and everything like that, it was a success for the standpoint of, you know, really introducing people to Brazil and everything went really smoothly. And like I said, the people were really nice. The weather was beautiful. I thought it was a really nice trip.
You know what Spoon said there, for me, what resonated was the people the most. And I mean, we're going 5,000 miles away to a place that, like, I've seen Brazil soccer, but I know nothing about this country and I've never been there. So a great experience going in, but really not knowing what to expect. And the generosity, the joy, how generous the Brazilian people, everyone from Brazil that I encountered, I know Spoon, I imagine you feel the exact same way, was what really stood out about this trip. And what was interesting is, you know, the NFL is very much a niche thing. It's not mainstream. It's not the Brazil national soccer team. It's not soccer, as we call it, the football, as they call it, right? But it wasn't an introduction to the segment of the Brazil fan base that has been longing for this experience. I mean, what stood out to me is that the Brazil Packers fans that I spoke with, they love football like you and I love football, American football. They are passionate about this sport. They're passionate about this team. One of the things that really blows me away is that it takes a heck of a lot of effort to be an out-of-market fan. I know that as a New York Mets fan. That's no kept secret. I wear that on my sleeve. I'm an out-of-market baseball fan, right? It takes a lot of effort. But the effort it takes to be a Packers fan in Brazil and the effort that these fans put forth is really, it's mind-blowing to me. It is a lot of work. It's not exactly cheap. But they're all about it. They're all in. So I think, just my opinion, I think the NFL did a really good thing here. I know the logistics are a friggin' nightmare. I know that it's a long flight. The field wasn't great. There's some issues to clean up. But bringing this sport to a fan base across the world that has been longing for this experience, that is passionate about the product, I think that, for me, in my eyes, I could see why the NFL should have an influence, a presence in the country of Brazil. That's what really stood out to me.
Well, I enjoyed the coverage from both of you guys, and it was cool to see all the photos, the videos, and even seeing how the players were engaged in everything, trying to speak Portuguese and all of that. It was a lot of fun, and again, I enjoyed that. So again, salute to both of you guys on the coverage out there. So, all right, let's dive into the game because there's a lot to talk about. And I guess we can start with Jordan Love because that's what everyone wants to know. There's been the reports and status on his health. You know, it's been a MCL a couple of weeks. And there's been a lot of ramblings and conflicting reports about maybe going to get a Ryan Tannehill, sticking with Malik Willis and Sean Clifford. But first things first, just big picture, and I'll start with you, Tom. Just, I guess, what were your takeaways when you saw the incident and just the aftermath afterwards?
So, we didn't have a real good look at replay from where we were in the press box. So I didn't really get to see it until after the press conferences and I could call it up. So my you know, perspective was that I saw him on the ground and he was writhing in pain, and that's usually not a very good sign. You know, he obviously got hit. I assumed he got rolled on or something like that. And, you know, it took, he walked off the field with two, you know, medical people under, or a medical person under each arm. So he wasn't putting a lot of weight on it. Then, you know, afterwards, after the game, I saw him walking around the locker room, and it wasn't, you know, it didn't appear like there was that much attention being paid to him. He looked like he was walking okay. Looking at it on tape, it did look like it was an MCL type injury because, I mean, you can't speculate that at the time, but anytime you see the knee bend inwards, that's usually an indication of an MCL, because the MCL is on the outside of the of your knee, and you know the ACL runs down the middle. So, but you never know. You never know till they get those MRIs, and you can be surprised sometimes. So, I wasn't surprised, you know, that it turned out it was MCL. The reason you're hearing different times is because they people don't know exactly how each guy's going to respond to an MCL. I've seen guys come back from an MCL in a week. Linemen can sometimes come back from it faster because they can wear a brace on their knee and it keeps them from going one direction or the other. It sounds to me like, you know, it's a minimum 3-week injury for him, and then it could be more beyond that. And that, you know, looking at the injury, it was, you know, he did a remarkable job of getting rid of the ball left-handed, you know, dumped it to Josh Jacobs behind him. And what I noticed was, so it was, his knee was bending inward. It was his left knee, and it's bending inward. And somehow he kind of got his body in a position where he was then able to fall forward. So his knee kind of bent inward, and then he sort of fell forward. If he isn't able to do that, I think it's a much worse injury. I think the fact that somehow, whether it was the momentum of how, where he was being pushed, or if he was able to turn his hips or what, you could see then his knee kind of went forward. And so I think it had a possibility of being a much worse injury. But somehow he... either he got lucky or he's athletic enough that he corrected himself or whatever. It turned out to be not the worst case scenario.
Yeah. Ryan, do you want to add in to that just from your perspective too? And just in general, I mean, it's what, 5-6 seconds left to go in the game. Tough situation for Jordan Love, who, you know, came off the big offseason contract, had a lot of momentum heading into this season. And even though, you know, I guess the bright spot appears like he will be able to come back this season.
I want to pitch both of you guys a question, actually. I'm curious, Dominique, you were watching it on TV, had a great view at the time. And Spoon, I'm curious because you obviously your expertise in the league. Was that a dirty hit?
No. No,
I don't think so. I mean, I guess if you slow it down, it looked like a high-low situation. But in the play and the spread of the game, I didn't think.
I could see that argument because you got to make a play, right? If you're a defensive lineman, you got to make a play. The game's on the line. You're probably going to win, but you're like a play or two away from winning a game. You got to make a play. It's not a good look to be on the ground going at a quarterback's knees ever in this league, which is effectively what happened. So that's why I asked the question, because I don't think it's the best look, but I also understand the perspective of you have to make a play. Like,
yeah, but watch his right arm. Watch his right arm goes up to his hip and tries to pull him. He grabs his lower leg, and then it comes up. he doesn't try to just pull his knees down. I thought he actually was trying to pull him to the ground, not just wrap up and you know, hold on while some guy clobbered him. So I looked at it a number of times, and I honestly thought he was trying to get him down on the ground because he was still trying to make a play with the ball at the time that he grabbed him. So yeah. I didn't think it was dirty at all. And the hit from the top, what are you going to do? He's still got the ball in his hand. Absolutely.
And
Jordan Love is a big guy. He's not like a small quarterback. He's a big guy as well, which plays into it.
That's true. No, I was curious what you thought, because as I looked at it, it's like my gut was you have to make a play in that situation. You have to get him on the ground. Like, that is your job. You have to get him on the ground. I wondered what the Packers might think of, you know, a defensive lineman or a defender going at. If I'm the Packers, I'm not thrilled with it because I don't want you going at my quarterback's knees. But from the outside, I'm not the Packers, and I understand. You got to make a play. Like, that's what you have to do in that situation. He's to your point, Dominique, he's a big dude. It's hard to get him on the ground. So I don't have a whole lot to add on the injury front other than I wonder if this is going to be one of those things where how much are the Packers going to trust Jordan Love's input on how he feels? If this was Aaron Rodgers, Aaron Rodgers would have a lot of say on when he's back on the field. There would be we saw this after London, right, in 2022. He broke his throwing thumb, and the Packers were very much, okay, Aaron, how do you feel? You want to play? Not going to play? It was very much in Aaron Rodgers' hands. Jordan Love is a young quarterback. He doesn't have that kind of clout yet. I think it'll be very interesting to see how the organization handles his return to this to play. 3-week minimum, Spoon, but that's – if he's back in 4 weeks – how much of his game does he actually have? Like, is he mobile at that point? Is he basically a statue in the pocket? Which he is the guy. He has the arm to be effective, I think, as a statue in the pocket. But his mobility is also part of his game. How long does that return, I think, will be very interesting. It's not just about him being on the fields. When is he at full capacity again? That's going to be very, very interesting to track. And the last thing to me, I think, you know, he's 17 of 34, 260 yards, 2 touchdowns, and a horrible pick. We look at how he played before the injury. He has to be better, obviously. I think that there's some silver lining that this was a bad, quote-unquote, Jordan Love game, and it was nothing like a year ago, his bad games. I mean, it was still – he made plays, showed the arm talent, a lot of depth at receiver. But the Packers are paying him to be better than he was week one. So when he is healthy again, he is going to have to put forth a better performance for this team. That was my takeaway of just the way he played.
Yeah, the thing I will say about whether he has a say in it, if you remember Rodgers, and I think it was in 17 when he broke the collarbone. I can't remember if it was 13 or 17, but he wanted to come back and they wouldn't let him. You know, remember, they were really conservative about bringing him back. And so I wonder if, you know, it's they're going to make sure he is completely healthy before they let him back on the field, because there's too much season left to try to rush him back. And so I would guess their medical staff, they're typically very conservative. So, you know, when you say 3 weeks, maybe that's if everything goes right and they can find a brace for him to wear that's helpful, but it could be six. It could easily be 6 weeks, you know,
and
you don't know for sure.
This is a knee, not a thumb too. Right. That does, to me, that makes it different. Even a thumb on your throwing hand, you don't mess with knees. And as Kenny Clark said, after the game in the locker room, he's the franchise. You don't mess with the franchise, right? Especially when he's still this young, a knee. Yeah, no, I see this as kind of a process. It's not just he's boom, he's back. And it's going to be a process of, okay, when's he back on the field? And when is he at full capacity? Is there a variance there between the two? He's got to be able to move well enough to protect himself, or else he won't play. But that moving well enough to protect yourself isn't exactly the same of, okay, the play's dead. I've got to extend it. I get 15 yards scrambling, you know, which he can do when he's healthy. I would imagine he's back before he gets to that point, but he's got to be able to move well enough to protect himself, the sweet spot in between the two.
Because of that, I mean, there's one or two scenarios for the Packers. Do you look into the free agent pool and try to get a veteran quarterback for a few weeks, or do you watch and see what happens with Malik Willis and Sean Clifford? I mean, the coaches were high on Malik Willis's potential and capabilities. He did in the Titans. He did have a chance to play and start because of Tannehill's injuries and things of that nature. He had a good preseason this past preseason with the Titans. Not ask you to speculate or think what the Packers might want to do, but what do you think? I'll start with you, Ryan. What do you think direction the Packers maybe should go? This is just your guesses, and I guess how much of it is because of the unknowns with Jordan Love that it does make it tough to make a decision.
My guess is that Jordan Love's not going to miss enough time to be worth Ryan Tannehill's time. That's my guess. So I think that they made this trade for Malik Willis. They gave up a seventh-round pick, which for Brian Gutekunst, we know is not nothing. He loves his draft picks, even if they are seventh-rounders. The big question with Malik Willis is going to be how well does he know the offense, right? There's been some carryover in the past, but let's face it, he's brand spanking new to this offense, to this Matt LaFleur offense. He's had less than a couple weeks in this Matt LaFleur offense. The Packers were comfortable enough with him to be the number two instead of Sean Clifford on Friday night, meaning that if Jordan Love's knocked out of the game on the second to last play of the first half instead of the second last play of the second half, then it's Malik Willis who's playing the second half. So they knew going in like that's a possibility, and they were okay with that. So he's going to start against the Indianapolis Colts. He's going to be the guy. How do you prepare him is going to be the question. There's got to be some limitation to how well he knows the offense. Well, his athletic ability alone is an edge over Sean Clifford. I imagine you're going to see a very different type of offense built around Malik Willis' strengths, which his legs are going to be part of that. What he can do as a runner, he's always had tremendous speed. He's a playmaker carrying the football. That is going to be a part of this offense. How much? We'll see. I mean, how much is going to be dependent on where Malik Willis's accelerated learning of this Packers offense, the route tree concepts, all those things, where that is come next Sunday when they have their home opener against the Colts.
Yeah. Tom, do you have anything that, you know, stands out or
gets
your perspective?
I mean, I think, you know, for sure it's going to be Willis, and this is exactly what Gutekunst was thinking about when he made this trade. Was okay, if they need three or four games, he's like, I'm sure he was like, you know, if they lose Jordan Love for the season, what, you know, their season's over. If they lose them for three or four games, do they have somebody who can, you know, possibly win them some games, and they develop somebody over time that they can keep around? After that, I think the big question is Malik Willis any good? Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of people in the league who don't think he's any good. And I have to admit that the fact he couldn't even get off Hail Mary at the end was like pretty shocking to me. That, you know, you come in and you got two plays and you throw one wildly, and the next one you can't even get a Hail Mary off. That's not a good sign. No, it's just two plays. But there's a lot of people in the NFL who think he can't play. So we're going to find out a lot about him in the next couple of weeks. I do think LaFleur is going to alter the offense considerably and, you know, put in a lot of read option type stuff. He had RG3 in Washington, and when he was a quarterback's coach in Washington, and they developed a lot of stuff for him, and I'm sure he's going to go back to that kind. But boy, I would not be surprised if they don't run the ball 40 times against the Colts. And everything they try to give Willis is pretty easy completion stuff. They're just not going to be able to get very deep into their playbook. Yeah, I think it could go really badly for them in the next 3 weeks. I think they're lucky, you know, they get the Colts, Titans, and then the Vikings. And it's not the three best teams in the NFL, but man, those are three games they probably were thinking they're going to win. And now all of a sudden, it's really up in the air. And a lot of it is in the hands of Malik Willis.
And more than anything, I'm curious to see, Ryan, did you have anything else you needed to add?
No, go ahead, Dominic. What are you curious to see?
Well, as far as just with the offense as a whole, because when you look at the game with the Eagles, I mean, it was some inconsistent play. I think, at least in the second half, especially the run game with Josh Jacobs. Emmanuel Wilson did a good job stepping in as well. Jaden Reed was terrific, but there were some issues with the offensive line. There were some penalties, some holds, some false starts. There were some drop balls from the wide receivers. So I think more than anything, I'm curious already what the offense looked like, even if Jordan Love was healthy, because it was inconsistent. But even more so if you're going to be bringing in a backup guy who just got in town all of a week or two ago.
I completely agree with you. You know, I want to preface this with saying they're going to be playing with a backup quarterback, and that is never ideal in this league. It will be challenging. Okay, let's make that very clear. Let's just call out the obvious. The sky is blue, and playing with a backup quarterback in the NFL is not ideal. That's not what you want to be doing. That said, I'm going to paint a little bit of a rosier picture here, and I'm with Spoon. They are lucky when the schedule breaks the way it is. They've got the Colts, they've got the Titans, they've got the Vikings. I think those are three winnable games with a backup quarterback. I'm not saying they're going to go out and win all three, but those aren't automatic losses. They shouldn't be. I don't think they should be viewed as automatic losses. It's certainly different than if it was in November and they had the 49ers, Dolphins, at Detroit, at Seattle four straight weeks. This is the stretch of games that you'd rather have a fighting chance against these opponents than later in the season. To me, this is where the rest of the roster, which is really young, I have said it's really talented. There's a lot of solid depth here. That has to step up. Again, I know it's a quarter. I've said it for years. QB wins are real in the NFL. It's a quarterback league. It's a quarterback game at this level. It's not ideal to have a backup, but the offensive line's got to be a lot better than it was against the Eagles. I understand that's a really good Philadelphia Eagles defensive front, but it got handed to them quite a bit. Until, you know, Josh Jacobs made a few things happen in the second half, but 4 yards on six carries in the first half ain't going to get it done the next few weeks. They have to open up more holes up front. They were going to have to protect better. You can't have the drops that they had against the Eagles. Dontavian Wicks with two, a couple others scattered about. I think there was, if I'm not mistaken, I think there was four drops off the top of my head. So Jordan Love was 17 of 34. That's not good enough, but should have been 21 of 34 with over 300 yards. Like, you cannot, you all the little things that frankly the Packers struggled with around Jordan Love on Friday night, they have to do all those things exceptionally well because there's a backup quarterback playing. And if they do that, I don't think that these are three automatic losses. I think that the Packers can hold their own. And if he misses four games and you go 2-2, that's wonderful. You get out of this thing 2-3. That's you're in a really solid shape going on with the rest of your season at that point.
Yeah, and what stands out to me about that loss is, you know, LaFleur and his staff are going to have to be better equipped, better prepared than they were. I thought they did a pretty bad job of dictating to the Eagles what they were going to do. I thought they let the Eagles dictate to them what they were going to have to do. They were the ones who had to make all the adjustments. And instead of making Philadelphia make a lot of adjustments. Now, Philadelphia did have to back off a little bit with how it was stopping the run. And that's why, because Jaden Reed was killing them in the secondary. And that's why the run kind of opened up in the second half, because they had to back off. But, you know, when you have three shots inside your opponent's territory after two turnovers and you can only manage two field goals, I mean, that's when, you know, your coaching staff has to be at its best. It has to have stuff that, bam, you go right at those guys and you score three touchdowns and all of a sudden the game is over. And I thought they kind of failed in that regard. Also, you know, Halfley, I felt kind of played it scared. I mean, I don't think they really attacked Philadelphia at all. I thought they kind of sat back and let Philadelphia dictate everything to them. And so he's got to regroup his staff and get them together. He's got to come out with a great game plan for Willis. And then defensively, they got to kind of get it back together, you know, bring them together and you know, shut down the run a little more than they did in this last game.
I think that was going to be a point I went to with the defense. I mean, how surprised are you guys just of pretty much, like you said, that inconsistent play? We talked about the depth. We talked about the added pieces. There were some bright spots. Xavier McKinney, he was able to get an early interception. After having seven picks total all of last season, you were able to get two. Jair Alexander got one as well. I mean, there were some times he got burnt, but he was still able to get the turnover. Just what did you make of that defensive group? And Ryan, you can start off with this one.
I think Jeff Halfley's 0-for-1 to start off his tenure as the Green Bay Packers defense coordinator with the plan. And it was stunning to me to hear multiple guys in the locker room, Kenny Clark, Rashawn Garrett, multiple guys up front say, yeah, the plan was to make Jalen Hurts play quarterback. Just like it was 2019 against the Chicago Bears when Tremont Williams says we wanted to make Mitch Trubisky play quarterback. Jalen Hurts and Mitch Trubisky are not the same. They're not even close to the same. I understand Jalen Hurts can absolutely kill you with his legs. You got to be careful. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying you just rush undisciplined and that's what they did in late 2022, the last time they played. And Jalen Hurts had over 100 yards rushing in the first quarter. He ended with 17 carries for over 150. He had 157 rushing yards in that game and 153 passing yards. I'm not saying he's not dangerous. You have to have great rush integrity and all that. But you can't, you have to get pressure on him too. Like, you can't just let him sit back and hit bunnies all game because he will kill you, and that's what he did. The touchdown to start the second half to A.J. Brown. Watch the pocket on that play. They rush four. He has 3 seconds to throw, a completely clean pocket. He sets his feet. Jair Alexander didn't play it perfectly, but if he did, it still would have been tough because it's Jalen Hurts with a clean pocket and time to throw to A.J. Brown.
And Devontae Smith, exactly.
Yeah, you have to get pressure on this quarterback who's surrounded by really talented and they just wanted to make him play quarterback. That it wasn't a good plan, Spoon. I don't know if you see it differently, but I was stunned when I heard that.
Yeah, I thought everything that happened positively for them on defense was individual play. You know, now McKinney's interception was a nice play, but, you know, there was a little bit of Wyatt getting up in his face. You know, Quay Walker had good coverage, so that was a little bit of a team play. But Jerry Alexander's interception was him noticing that there was a tight end running wild down the middle, and he got to the spot and got to the ball first. You know, they had guys who made individual plays. Rashawn Gary made several outstanding plays that forced Hurts to get rid of the ball. But when you looked at it from a team standpoint, I just didn't think that they were, you know, meshing well together, you know, especially in the run game. And maybe that's just because they haven't played this defense a whole ton together, and maybe that's something that'll get better as the year goes on. But I wasn't impressed with, you know, them taking it to the Eagles that much. I thought that the Eagles, you know, once they kind of regrouped from, you know, Saquon Barkley slipping in the backfield and losing 5 yards on the first play and then the interception and then a bad snap, you know, once they kind of recovered from that, then they were sort of in control after that. And, you know, they got to be better as a unit.
Yeah. As we're wrapping things up, just a couple more points. I guess it's only fitting you do talk about kicker. Braden Arvidsson did make his debut. He went 3-for-4. But I think the one thing that was still impressive as a rookie in a debut in that environment, to miss the 43-yarder in the third quarter, to respond in the fourth quarter and make another field goal. And really, he was one of the main guys that kept the Packers in it in terms of getting points on the board. What did you make of the rookie's debut?
Yeah, I mean, it was an okay game. You got to hit those. I mean, you absolutely have to hit those. It's a 43-yarder. There's no wind. The conditions were perfect.
Yeah.
So there weren't too many excuses. I thought he kicked off really well. The one squib kick he made that landed, you know, in a corner and it pinned them way back. That was a beautiful kick. I think there's something to work with there. And you're right. It was important that he came back and nailed 26-yarder. I think all his kicks were really solid. But again, you know, when you're a team that has last year watched your kicker miss, hit a bunch, and then miss the most important kicks, it's sort of like a flashback. And so there's still time, but he's going to face harder conditions, I think, and more difficult kicks. So, it's going to be judging him over, you know, the course of the season. But, you know, one thing you can say is the guy hits the ball competitively. I mean, he put some force behind all of his kicks, and you couldn't say that about Carlson. Carlson sometimes, you know, the wind would take his ball, and I think that's going to work for him. Just got to see if he's a head case or not, but it didn't appear so after, you know, the way he went after the last kick.
Look, maybe it's my turn to be the curmudgeon, but that needed to be a 4-for-4 night. They were all easy kicks. The 43-yard, you have to hit that. I don't give him a lot of credit for coming back and hitting a 26-yard field goal. My God, you're an NFL kicker. You better hit a 26-yard field goal in good conditions. I'm not saying that Braden Arvidsson's not going to be the guy, but it was not a good start. He had from extra points to field goals, every kick that he made should have been an automatic kick. And they hit the right upright from 43 yards, as Spoon said, for a team that is a little scarred on 40-ish yard field goals right now after last season. I thought it was concerning. Like that, there's no way you can watch that and not be a little concerned going forward. Like, okay, are the automatic kicks going to be automatic? This is the NFL. Anything 45 and in should be darn near automatic, and it wasn't. So, look, Brian Gutekunst has said that he's not patient enough with kickers. He's obviously going to get at least another week, but he's got to make the automatic kicks automatic, and they weren't. That's concerning to me. And I just don't give a lot of props for coming back and nailing a 26-yard field goal.
Yeah. Well, I guess that is kind of the story of the whole game for the whole group. Inconsistent. You had some bright spots and you had some moments that you need to work on. So now that you move on to the Colts, a team that lost to the Texans, as you we wrap up this heading into that game on this coming Sunday, what do you want to see in particular, or what do you want to see maybe from an individual or maybe individuals? Like, you want to see more from them heading into week two?
I would just say that they need to be a more disciplined team. The number of really bad penalties, dumb mistakes, you know, I don't know how you're illegally lined up on a punt, you know, which the guy kicks an absolute, you know, rocket, pins them back, and you got to get an illegal formation on your punt coverage. Some of the, you know, Slayton jumping off sides on after you've just stopped them on third and one, the tush push, you stop them and then you give them the gimme on the very next play. Kenny Clark holding the guy, you got him stopped and he grabs the running back. You know, just some really, really undisciplined bad plays, and that can't be what their MO is for the season. I don't know what happened to them, if it was because, you know, sometimes I always believe that penalties happen because you're getting beat, because your opponent, whoever you're playing against, has beaten you and you got to grab them and you have to do something to compensate. So I don't know if that's what was happening, or they were just doing dumb stuff. But, wow, It was there were a lot of mistakes in that game.
Spoon, I know you're really locked into the live blog during games. I don't know if you heard me, but it's midnight local when the fourth quarter starts. And in the fourth quarter, I was darn near losing my nerve with all the yellow. It was so late. And it was like every play I'm seeing laundry. And it's not just the Packers. They had 10. The Eagles had 7. There were 17 penalties. And it's midnight local when the fourth quarter starts. I had some words, Spoon. I was muttering some things. It was getting late. It's getting real late on the temperature there. Now, look, I don't know if it's crew. Obviously, not all of it's crew. They got to clean some stuff up. But in general, so I'm with you there. In general, I think it's what I said. All the little things that were sloppy, from blocking assignments to, here's something. Their first two touchdowns that they allowed, one was on Isaiah McDuffie, getting burnt and crisp in coverage against Saquon Barkley. The other was on Quay Walker, completely whiffing a tackle on Saquon Barkley at the line of scrimmage. It could have been a stuff. How long until we see Edgerrin Cooper play a lot more snaps than 11? Because he was drafted to be – his athletic profile, I understand he missed most of camp with a hip, but he looked pretty good. His athletic profile, it's different, right? They need him to be what they drafted him to be sooner than later for this defense, because as I see it, the softest part of this defense right now, or at least coming out of the opener, very well might have been that second level. I mean, they've got to shore some things up at linebacker. But all the little things on offense, the blocking assignments, the catch the ball, like those things have to be automated. The field goal. 43 yards. All those the things that should be made at this level that weren't made Friday night, they have to be made now because everything's escalated when you got a backup quarterback.
Yeah, I guess.
I'll add about that linebacker situation. They're in a pickle because Quay Walker can't play middle linebacker. He's not a middle linebacker, and they went the entire camp thinking that he could. They know he's a weak side linebacker. That's what he should be. He should be a guy who all he has to do is chase and, make running tackles and not take on linemen and things like that. And now they're in a pickle. Cooper, you're right. He needs to be on the field, but where are they going to put him? They can't put him in the middle. And, they're going to have to play him probably in a nickel situation, get McDuffie off the field in nickel situations. You saw Barkley scorched him bad on the touchdown. And I don't know what they do in that situation. Do they start to give Teron Hopper some snaps in the middle, maybe just on first downs? I just don't believe that Quay Walker can play in the middle. I don't think that that's the best place to put him. But they had plenty of time to address that. And now they're kind of stuck, I think, unless they find that they can use Hopper.
Okay, Spoon, I want to put this on a tee for you, and you tell me where I'm wrong, all right? But first and foremost, that touchdown catch for Saquon Barkley, like literally under my breath, the first thing I said when I saw that was, didn't they draft a guy in the second round to cover a Saquon Barkley? Like, he's got to play. But in terms of the configuration, here you go. I understand Isaiah McDuffie is undersized to play Mike by the measurables. I understand that. But to me, his game is tailored. What he brings to the table is the aggressiveness, the ruggedness that you want from your Mike linebacker. And he knows Jeff Hafley very well. He's played for Jeff Hafley. That to me, like all offseason going into camp, I'm thinking like, Isaiah McDuffie makes sense as the Mike. I get it. I get that he's undersized, but his play style and his familiarity with Jeff Hafley, just slot him in at Mike. Let Quay Walker play on either outside. Quay Walker and Edgerrin Cooper are both Will linebackers. Well, they can't both play Will linebacker. In the nickel, it's very simple. It's two linebackers. It's Quay Walker. It's Edgerrin Cooper. If they're both healthy, that's all you see in the nickel. It should only be those two guys. You got to figure something out on base. Maybe Quay Walker being the bigger linebacker, maybe he's the strong and you put Edgerrin Cooper at weak. But either way you want to do it, to me, Isaiah McDuffie is the Mike because of his play style, even if he's a little undersized for that position. Am I wrong, Spoon?
No, I if I was them, I'd be concerned about his size. That's the biggest question. Can he take on linemen, you know, without getting plowed into next week? Of course, Walker isn't that much better at it. You
doesn't
know,
take off.
He's a long levered guy and he's not built to just take guys on in the hole. That's Hopper is the type of guy who can do that. Yeah, that's certainly a possibility. They'd have to really protect McDuffie, but at least he's going to slam his head, you know, his face up in the hole and everything like that. I just think they got a little bit of a dilemma and they're going to have to figure out something. Maybe, you know, maybe it is that they play nickel and all the time. And maybe they use like an Oladapo, a big safety as a third type of a linebacker as the strong side. I don't think Eric Wilson can get it done. I don't think he's long for being a starter. They don't play the base that much, but they got to start being creative. You know, they got to figure this out because they had all camp. They poured everything into McDuffie being the weak side guy and Quay Walker the middle, and I'm not sure that's going to fly.
That's just bizarre to me because think of the two, who would you rather have take on, Isaiah McDuffie or Quay Walker? To me, it's Isaiah McDuffie. I understand he's undersized, but I've seen Quay Walker take on. Of the two, who would you rather be playing in space and chasing, Quay Walker or Isaiah McDuffie? To me, yeah, it's very easily Quay Walker. Like,
right.
It's flipped. I don't understand it. I understand anyone that coaches in the NFL knows more about football than me. I'm not saying that, but I just don't. I'm missing something. I don't understand that.
It is a question, though. I think it might be fair, maybe not fair to ask, but I'm curious. Do you feel like during the preseason, because they kept it too vanilla, that it maybe backfired because they're still trying to experiment? Is that fair or unfair?
Maybe. I mean, you know, they were playing it how they would play in the season against their own offense. You know, they had lots of reps against their number one offense and 2-minute drills and the such. I just think they misjudged it. And I don't know if they have to find somebody who can play middle linebacker, if they have to take a chance on Hopper, because we saw that he will stick his nose in there and yeah, he'll hit some people. He's probably from, you know, he missed some camp. He's probably not as in tune, but I will not be surprised if we start to see him on the field a little bit more. Maybe it's Hopper and Walker on first down, and then Walker and Cooper after that, you know, but they really got to figure something out there. Because they got Jonathan Taylor coming up this week. And if you think, you know, Barkley can run between the tackles, wait till Jonathan Taylor hits it up in there. So,
yeah, I guess if there is, with all this being said, if there is a silver lining for the Packers, it is only week one. There's still plenty of football left to be played. They do have some things they have to work on, but it's just going to be fascinating because week one to week two really could look drastically different for more reasons than one.
Yeah, and week one from week 16 is going to probably look different. That's how seasons go. You know, a lot of times you don't find out who your real guys are until later in the year. And so, but, you know, you've got to – we'll find out if Halfley is proactive about this stuff. That's what I'm kind of curious to see.
Yeah, because he talked a lot about it in the offseason, said he just was ready to let it rip. So I think the fans are wanting to see more of that, especially heading into this game with the Colts. But for all things Packer news, Ryan Wood and Tom Silverstein will have you covered. Thank you for watching the Green 19 podcast.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything.
Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.